Hello, party people, and welcome to a very much under construction office hours. Everything is wacko about the video and audio in here. The lighting's not quite right because I'm in the midst of literally moving my home office down here to the first floor. I'm just moving from one bedroom of the house to another because we're merging a couple of bedrooms in the house to make a larger room. Ended up moving everything down here. I kind of like this part of the house because now I have a window straight out onto the neighborhood and I can watch people coming and going, which is kind of fun. But it means that I have to repaint a green wall back here. You know, I use green screen training. Whenever I'm doing training videos, I'm normally facing this monitor. I'm talking about things. I'm like walking around from side to side. And so because the camera shoots this way and there's a green wall behind me, I can do like the weatherman on TV does or the weather person on TV does. And I can just appear over my slides or pointed execution plan parts. It's a lot of fun. But to do that, it requires really coordinated lighting. So I'm redoing, I had to put in new lighting here in this guest bedroom. And after I get done painting the green screen today, I have to go through and calibrate all the lighting, get it so that the shadows show up correctly in different places and all that. It's a lot of work. Surprising. It usually takes, whenever I set up a home office, it's usually like 3 or 4 days worth of work to get all the video stuff exactly right. Audio even too, it's probably echoey in here because it's like vinyl flooring and small room with hard walls. So I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to absorb some of the sound, maybe put down a rug. We'll see what happens. But I wanted to record in office hours because I'm getting ready to go on a couple cruises again, and I don't know if I'm going to have time on those to answer your SQL Server questions. We'll see. I'll bring my camera gear along, and we'll see what happens. But the first one is called the Groove Cruise, and it's 24-hour DJs all over the boat, literally 24-hour DJs. There's something like 533 events on this cruise between different concerts with different DJs and whatnot from all over the world. Now, so clearly I'm not going to be able to film on that because it'll be wub, 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 wub everywhere on there. So I figured, well, I better get to some of your questions because there are some interesting questions in here. So we'll hit the first question. The top voted question was from Born to be Glowing, which has got to be a K-pop Demon Hunters reference, which I love. Have you ever added a feature to a first responder kit that you had hesitation or regrets on? If so, which one? Yes, unit testing. I am a fan of testing when other people do it, but because it's not my job, because it's not something that I focus and spend a lot of time on, and T-SQL unit testing is really hard to get, especially when you're talking about things like testing system DMVs, where you can't really fake the contents of it. It's really challenging. So there were a couple of people who were real adamant that we put unit testing in or some kind of testing into the first responder kit, and they did it via like GitHub Actions and stuff. And it worked off and on for about a year. And I even warned them. I said, look, you're going to have to be around to support this. When the tests fail, but there's not a problem with the code, you got to jump in and actually do something about that because I have no clue about this technology and I'm not going to learn it. And it gradually broke more and more over the subsequent years. And so I it just drives me crazy now. I tried ripping it out and I didn't get all the pieces out. So I got to go finish ripping it out. But that's also part of why I'm real tough on people requesting features, people contributing features to the first responder kit. Because if I'm not an expert on whatever it is that they're returning about the server, like if they warn you about something and I don't know if what they're warning you about really makes sense, I don't want to maintain that. Because I don't have experience with setting whatever that threshold is or giving you good advice on how to fix that particular problem. And they're going to walk away and I'm going to be the one left holding the bag. So it's really tricky as an open source maintainer, walking the line between I want everything in there, I want every feature, but at the same time, I don't want to have to support every feature. And at the end of the day, there are only a few of us who are checking in on the first responder kit, like issues and pull requests all the time. So that makes it really challenging. If It's also one of the bigger open source things in the SQL Server community. There's DBA tools, there's Eric Darling scripts, but Ola Hallengren is another great example of this. Ola Hallengren's maintenance scripts are these big, complex scripts that do backups, index maintenance, statistics maintenance, stuff that's really mission critical for your database servers. Well, he has put it into GitHub a while back, a few years ago, and immediately got overwhelmed with tons of pull requests from including me. And he's like, you know what? I don't really want to take anybody's pull requests because then I got to go test your code. So that real long answer there, but it's a fun question. So I really like that. Next question's also kind of fun. Coolstad says, "Hi Brent, have you changed your opinion on SQL Server Management Studio's Copilot? Your post from May of last year suggests that we steer clear of it, but I wonder if Microsoft has made any improvements." So they have made improvements. So now you can use your GitHub Copilot account instead of going through all this setting up an Azure OpenEye endpoint and stuff like that. So it makes it way easier to get started. I still think the user experience is pretty terrible. The whole part of copy-pasting things back and forth, the advice is really weird. It's really limited in terms of what it knows about your database. I've gotten really bad results from sometimes it has accurate information about what's in my database, sometimes it does not. And I know that they're continuing to invest in it. If it works for you, that's fine. I just still wouldn't hop on that bicycle as of January of 2026. I'd wait for the next release after that and see what comes with it. Because in a recent Ask Me Anything in Reddit about GitHub or about SSMS Copilot, Aaron Stellato, the product manager or program manager or whatever it is over at Microsoft, who manages that SSMS tooling, said that she feels the pain that we're all talking about of copy-pasting things back and forth between different windows and trying to manage context, and says that there's something coming in a future version of SSMS that will allow it to work more like it does in Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code. So that, I've never seen it. I have no inside information. I kind of like, I don't want any inside information because then I can't remember what I'm supposed to talk about, what I'm not supposed to talk about. So my hope for that would be a blog post that I put together maybe a year ago and said the better way to do Copilot inside of SSMS would be to just integrate it right into the query pane. Just let me put in like a comment and hit execute on it. And when GitHub or when SSMS saw that particular kind of comment, they would route that context window over to OpenAI or to GitHub Copilot instead of trying to execute it against my SQL server. I think that that would be a much better user interface. I don't know that they're going to do that, but that's the kind of thing that I wish they would. So it's funny. This is also why, these are great questions, this is also why I'm really struggling with picking what sessions I'm re-recording out of my training classes, because I want whatever the final visual iteration of it is, I want to use it in the mastering classes on query tuning and index tuning. But I know that it's going to keep changing over the next 3, 6, 9 months. I don't want to invest a bunch of time in recording training that I got to go through and immediately then go re-record. So it's really interesting to have to deal with that. Let's see here. Next up, YouTube Freeloader asks, "I have a select query that's intermittently timing out after 30 seconds." Okay, so when, just one thing to say though, when, and this is for everybody listening, when you say timeout, SQL Server doesn't time queries out. That's your application maybe canceling the query after 30 seconds. But there's, in terms of SQL Server, queries don't time out. You can write horrendous queries that run for days and SQL Server be like, "I'm on that, boss." Says, "My monitoring tool is showing that 98% of the total wait time for this query is page latch. What query attributes should I be looking for that would cause this issue?" What you probably want to do is do the conventional query tuning stuff that I talk about in my Fundamentals of Query Tuning class. And I know you said YouTube Freeloader, and I just said this is a paid training class, but I'm going to give you like a 60-second synopsis of one of the concepts that matters a lot. You're going to want to turn on SetStatistics.io. You're going to want to read the query plan from right to left, top to bottom, and look for the first place where estimated rows versus actual rows are off by more than like 10x. Whatever that operator is doing and the previous one before that, SQL Server didn't understand how many rows were going to come out of those operators. It couldn't predict it accurately. And so it ended up making bad decisions about how it was going to allocate its work. It's kind of like if I told you, hey, I want you to go into the kitchen, open up the recipe book, and go make a coq au vin. Sounds gross, but it's C-O-Q-A-U-V-I-N. It's a French recipe of cooking old, tough chicken meat or old, tough rooster meat. And it's a very complex, elaborate recipe. It involves taking all kinds of time. If you didn't know what coq au vin was, you would be forgiven for thinking, oh, how hard can it be? I'm probably going to be done in half an hour or an hour because just Brent asked me to go cook something. And then you'd be like, oh, God, it's going to take me 14 hours to cook. So you're doing the same thing with SQL Server. You're saying, hey, SQL Server, go whip me up a batch of results that are going to be this. And SQL Server's like, got it, I'm on it. And this is, oh, God, this is terrible. So wherever that estimate versus actual veers off, that's what you kind of want to either improve SQL Server's thinking on that portion or change the query to break it up into pieces so that SQL Server understands better how hard it's going to be to achieve that first set, and then it'll go build a new execution plan for the rest. Kind of like how, if I asked you to go to the kitchen, get a cookbook, and look at coq au vin and go make the recipe, you'd be like, hold on a second. Before I give you an estimate on how hard that's going to be, why don't I go look to see what the recipe of coq au vin looks like? Now, that is going to entail a little work. You're going to have to get your lazy rear up over onto the kitchen. Go open up the recipe book. Go pull the recipe for coq au vin. You're going to have to go look. I'm probably butchering the bejesus out of that pronunciation. You're going to have to go look at it, pull it, retrieve it, think about it, and then come back to me with another estimate for the second part of the work, which would be actually executing the recipe. That's the kind of work we're talking about with SQL Server. There are many options in order to improve query performance. We talk about those options and more inside of my Fundamentals of Query Tuning class, which you can get for, I want to say it's $89, but there you go. That should get you started at least. Now, you're probably going to see in the next coming office hours, you're probably going to see more food and travel and drinking references, maybe even drugs, because right on the other side of this camera is my painting of, let me go pull it off the wall because it'll be funny to show it to you. My painting makes it sound like I did it. I definitely did not. Cassie Otz's painting, she's an artist out of North Carolina. Cassie Otz's painting of Anthony Bourdain. It's always amusing to me. This used to be on my office wall back here, and every now and then I would get questions in the comments about, why do you have a portrait of Jeff Epstein on your wall? And I'm like, I most certainly do not. This is Anthony Bourdain. I can see how at a far distance you would find them confusing. Well, I love this painting. I love it so much. I love the fact that he's throwing the finger out there. Anthony Bourdain is like my spirit animal in all kinds of ways. But what I realized was, is I didn't want to have it where you see it. I wanted to have it where I see it, because it reminds me more of the kind of person that I want to be, the kind of material that I want to produce, the way that I want to explain things and all things like that. So I'm putting this painting on the wall where I see it, and it's not going to be where you see it, which means it also is going to influence things like even my answers. That's why I used that reference to that French recipe there for that particular answer. Boy, we're doing long answers today, aren't we? Holy smokes. Now, this one will be a short one. Now I'm Shining asks, what's your opinion of Azure Horizon DB? Does it stand a chance against Amazon Aurora? Azure Horizon DB is one of Microsoft's interpretations of Postgres, and they have a handful of them. Microsoft has this problem where they keep bringing out products, but then not putting the investment into each product to make it competitive. I really wish that they would consolidate their efforts into a good product, like what happened with SQL Server over the years. They poured a lot of money into it. They were very focused on it. It was their database to the point where they were thinking about building a file system on top of it and using it for their consumer operating systems. They really got a ton of investment over the years and focus. And right now, Microsoft is, their database efforts, it kind of feels like they're dividing up a bunch of people, giving them each $14 and a can of Coors Light, and telling them, build the best database you can. And I don't think that's a recipe for success. So again, with the recipe references. Faye says, have you ever had any surprises with dynamic data masking? I don't do any security work whatsoever, none. So I just don't have a good answer to that question. So there you go. This one's kind of funny. QEnt asks, hi Brent, based on the questions during office hours, how do you think SQL Server professionals' thinking and maturity have evolved over time? My first reaction when I saw this question come in was, I don't think that they have. But upon thinking about it, which is often why I look at the questions that are in the queue like a day before I'm going to do an office hours, and I just read through all of them, and it kind of helps me think in the back of my mind about what's going on. I was like, the more I thought about it, I was like, oh, I remember so many times where I have now seen people in the industry use terms that I use on office hours. Classic one, what's the problem you're trying to solve? I use that thing constantly, all the time. When people ask questions, I'm like, hold up, let's step back. What's the problem you're trying to solve? And I've started to see other people in the database business pick up that same line and use it. I love that. I love all of us having a similar vocabulary and working towards expertise together, improving our skills, improving. I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday in a blog post by Kendra Little, Kendra referenced the term presentation columns. She said that Eric Darling uses this term, presentation columns, and she loved it. It means when you're writing a query, these are the columns that we need to return as part of the select statement. We're going to present them to the end user. We may have other columns in our query that we're using for filtering or sorting. But the presentation columns are the ones that are just along for the ride in the select. We're not really juggling them. We shouldn't have to, wish we didn't have to allocate memory in order to store them, but you know, often that's how that works. I think it's a great example. I think Eric was brilliant for coming up with that term, presentation columns. And I'm sure we're all going to start using that more and more over time. I love that. So I think that the presence of video of us talking to each other encourages more vocabulary sharing, and I think that that's a good thing. It's so funny to me that I don't, like I said, I learned about the term from Kendra because I actually don't watch Eric's videos. It's not that I love Eric dearly. The guy's a genius. He's one of the smartest people I've ever met for SQL Server, and he's one of the most smartest people I've ever met, period. But I don't like watching video content in order to learn passively. I just don't have the time. I end up scanning blog posts and jumping out at me, which I always find funny because here we are talking on video. So the audience for that is different, which is just amusing. Next up, JRL says, what types of technology workers do you think are least exposed to AI-related job loss? Least exposed? I have no idea. I don't put any thought into it. I don't have a good answer for you there. You know who you should ask? ChatGPT. Steve asks, hey, you want to know something funny? So part of setting up the home office, the filming is so complex, and there's so many electronic pieces that in room things, lighting that has to be exactly right. One of the things that has to be right is that I have to have a fan on that camera that you're watching me on. It overheats when I record 4K 60 frame per second video for extended periods of time. And I did not have the fan plugged in, so the camera overheated and stopped recording. Brilliant. Now, normally I would want my office hours videos all in one big long cut, but I thought it was kind of funnier to leave that in, and now we're back to our question answering. So we'll do one more question. Steve said, in one of your courses, you say that if you're having to ask the developers to change their code, then you as a database administrator or a database platform have failed. So what do I mean by that? It's our job as running a database engine. He has a question too, but I'm gonna go off for a second on this. Our job to have a database engine that goes as quickly as possible and does what it's told in the least time possible. My job as a database administrator and as a consultant is to make that happen. And if I tell someone else, your query isn't good enough, or I need you to fix your application, that may be true. They may have a really terrible query. They may have a really terrible app. I have worked with stuff you would never believe. One of my favorites was a team that did dynamic SQL in Perl, the Linux programming language, scripting language, really. It's not program. Don't even open that can of worms. So I've seen some horrific stuff. My goal is to go watch this, try again, and then all of a sudden it works faster. If I can't do that and I tell someone else that they have to do work, well, what good was I? What good was I as a database administrator or performance tuner if I make someone else do all the tuning? I mean, you're not a tuner at that point. Now, you're a trainer at that point. You can be teaching them, okay, here's how we're going to make better queries long term. Here are the architectural improvements that we're going to make. But you're not doing performance tuning there. You're doing training. And so that's why I look at the tuner part of my job would have been failing there. So Steve goes on to ask, how is this so that we've failed when you can't compensate for the work of others? Some of the queries that I see others write give the database no chance at all. That absolutely is true. You can see really heinous queries. It's still your job to do the best you can to make them perform well on the server side. That's what your job is. That's what they hired you to do. They did not hire you to tell other people that their work sucked. I tell you what, if some of you out there have that job, if your professional job is to walk around and go, well, boy, that's ugly. Hoo-wee, that's nasty. Boy, I can practically smell that code from here. If you have a job like that, I would love to hear about it in the comments, because also I don't think your job is going to be around that long, because the company's going to replace you with someone whose job it is to actually fix stuff and make things go better. So that's where that answer comes from. I know that there's a never-ending tide of bad queries, but you just got to remember why the company hired you to make things perform well. I would also say, too, that that's also the reason why companies pay for databases. There are cheaper, crapper databases. I'm going to give you an example, SQL Server Express Edition, that maxes out at one CPU core and 1 gigabyte of RAM. The company could have chosen to go with that, but they didn't. Why? Because they want more powerful queries. They want more than 1 gig of RAM to be used. They want SQL Server Agent as a scheduler or whatever. Well, they paid for all that capability in the box. They paid for all the cool things that Standard or Enterprise Edition give you. They want you to be able to use that technology to make bad queries go faster. That's part of the value of them, is the Query Optimizer is quite good. So if the Query Optimizer was even better, we could continue to let untrained, cheap developers or other application people like data analysts, power users, business people write queries and write reports any way that they want in order to get their job done. After all, the query compiled, right? The query compiled. And so I kind of get the business user's perspective if they say, well, here, I did what Books Online told me. This query is valid, and it gives me the data that I want. The database engine just does not do this quickly enough. Yes, it is valid for you to say, well, you should rewrite that query from scratch, but it would be better if you said, oh, try now, and then all of a sudden their work was able to keep going. All right, there we go. So there are a slew of questions. We went for quite a while, which is why the camera overheated. Now I'm going to spend the rest of the morning, and I say morning because I'm at the time as I'm recording this is 12:41 a.m. Vegas time. It is after midnight Vegas time, and I just recently woke up because Eve and I are still battling jet lag from our month-long. Eve was over in China for a month, and then I flew over and joined her. We did a week in China and then 3 weeks in Japan. It is really hard after you've been living somewhere for a month, especially like 16-hour time differences, to suddenly switch over and do something else here. I'm not working too hard to change my body's time clock or my time zones in my body, because we're only home for about 5-6 days. And then I'm actually packing tomorrow to go on Groove Cruise, that 24-hour DJ cruise. And what's the point of trying to get your body clock on the right time when you're about to be in an environment that has concerts continuously all around the clock? I can just always stumble to one of those. So I'll work on fixing that after I get off of the Groove Cruise. So I will see y'all in the next office hours, which might be me recovering in Miami. We're doing a Disney cruise and then recovering in Miami after that. We scheduled a lot of cruises. It's kind of disturbing. But I'll see you on the next office hours. Adios.